U.S. President and native Kansan, Dwight D. Eisenhower, once said that supreme quality for leadership is unquestionable integrity. Without it, no real success is possible, whether in an army or in an office. I'm Jabalani LaFall. As America prepares to select its president and its members of Congress for 2013 and beyond, we examine the psychology of leadership with Dr. Bruce Leese. Among the questions we will attempt to answer today, what's the difference between a leader and a boss? Between management and leadership? Are leaders born or are they made, forged out of circumstance? And the most important question of all is, Kansas City, what do you think a leader should be? That's coming up on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Good morning, Kansas City. Less than 24 hours from now, the majority of registered voters in America will head to the polls to select a candidate for the office of what has often been called the leader of the free world. It's a high-profile job, one in which, as one of the past leaders of the free world said, victory has 1,000 fathers, but defeat is an orphan. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today we examine the psychology of leadership. What makes a good leader? Who do we want to be our leaders? What do we want in our leaders? Why do we choose certain men and women to lead us? And joining us now, as he often does, to explore these persistent, evergreen questions at a higher level is Dr. Bruce Leese, professor of family medicine at KU. Welcome to Central Standard once again, Dr. Leese.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Actually, this is 2 years in November. I just thought of that.
2 years.
2 years I've gotten to work with you. It's my pleasure, and I thank you.
So 14 years in dog years.
That's right.
All right. Dr. Leese, what is a leader?
A leader is somebody who, by choice or by being recruited, is put in a position of substantial influence and power. A good one has lots of skills that he or she brings to the table in order to use and not abuse that power. And unfortunately, a less good one, a bad leader, can create great pain and havoc. With that power.
So what are the traits that a leader should possess if absolute power corrupts absolutely?
Well, I love doing these shows because I look everywhere at every resource. Well, the internet, this time I looked at Leadership for Dummies just to see what the lay literature had to say. And there's so many obvious ones. Now, we can fly through those, like intelligence and people skills and drive and accountability and decision-making skills. Those are all trustworthiness. Those are the general strengths of a good leader. When you start talking about political leaders, you talk about the ability to deal with big crises and international relations and relations with Congress or the other bodies of leaders. So there are countless characteristics associated with good leaders.
We'll get into the characteristics of leadership and the different leadership positions and what characteristics they require as this show progresses. But let's differentiate a little bit right now. What is the difference between management and leadership? In other words, what's the difference between a boss versus a leader?
The most exciting feature of being a leader is the ability to have a vision and then try to carry it out. So bosses and managers typically are in positions where they don't get to come up with that vision and that kind of big plan. Bosses are generally in positions to make sure that after the vision is set and the procedures are set, they make sure that people follow them. So
they're there essentially to crack the whip.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. There's, you know, some people prefer being leaders, some people prefer being managers and bosses, and some people prefer to just follow.
And we'll see why people choose these certain paths of life throughout this broadcast as well. Dr. Roy Arad said most leaders aren't seeking fame or attention. So what does a potential leader seek, Dr. Leese?
There are so many different reasons why people become leaders. Some seek a vehicle for providing service, doing good for humanity or for their constituency or for their community. So I would hope that service would be the most important thing that a leader seeks. Some seek just the power. They're ambitious. They want to further their own goals, desires. Some leaders become leaders because they seek attention. They are narcissists, and those are among the worst leaders there are. Some are recruited. I've seen it, in, as everybody has, I'm sure, in organizations, even in religious organizations, churches, synagogues, mosques, where you know, you just, if you're there enough, somebody will finally say, "Can you run this? Can you do this?" Even in the political realm, I've observed local politics where there just isn't somebody running for office for a particular party, and they are asked, "Would you please run?" Sometimes they're the person who can afford the campaign, and they're recruited by being told, you know, you'd make a great whatever, mayor, you'd make a great council person. They're recruited. They're told that they're going to be great leaders, and that's why they're recruited, but they actually are recruited because they can afford. They can afford to put all the yard signs out there. There are other reasons why people go in. Some people just inherit. If you're from a political family, and we know of multiple political families in the course of the country's history, if you're from a political family, you might just inherit the idea that you will be political. Family businesses, and some is just random. You know, some people just become leaders because they're in the right place or the wrong place at the right time.
Where do tough decisions come in that a leader has to make? Those that are unpopular in the moment, but that history will either judge harshly or later vindicate. Talk about the tough decisions a leader has to make to sort of define his or her leadership path.
That's especially important because you can divide leaders into the great ones, the mediocre ones, and the poor leaders. And a country, a nation, can get in a lot of trouble with a mediocre or a poor leader when there's a tough decision to make, and either the decision is not made or the wrong decision is made. I'll talk whenever you want about the presidents. For decades, we've had surveys where political scientists and other historians, experts, are asked to rate the presidents, and the presidents that come out the lowest, at the bottom of the list, by historian standards, those are the people typically, like around the Civil War time, that had profoundly important decisions to make and they did not make them. They had to make decisions about what to do about secession from the Union when states started to secede. So a good leader can handle tough decisions, can handle light decisions. A bad leader botches all kinds of decisions, and a mediocre leader might miss answers to some of the most important tough questions there are.
Since we'll be talking about presidential leadership in a moment, it's important to mention Andrew Johnson as one of those leaders that was ranked down in presidential history for not making some proper decisions during the Reconstruction period.
That's correct. He was the 17th president of the United States from the fateful year of 1865 when the Civil War ended through 1869. And there, since 1948, there have been rankings of presidents, and he has consistently come up as either the worst or close to the bottom. In one recent study, Buchanan beat him out for the worst president of all time. But both of these guys were presidents around the time of secession, the creation of the Confederacy, the time of slavery, and these guys didn't act in the nation's best interest. Not only were they not concerned about the human beings who were slaves, but they weren't even thinking about the country's best interest.
What's interesting is that Buchanan and Andrew Johnson were both either immediately preceding Abraham Lincoln or coming after Abraham Lincoln. So those are tough shoes to follow. Talk about the succession of leadership.
Buchanan failed to avert the Civil War. The nation was divided. I think when you say secession, you mean how did one go to the next, go to the next.
Right.
But the word secession is also relevant here because—
Exactly. Double entendre is going on.
That's right. The nation was really divided at that point. One by one, states started to fall away saying, you know, we are part of the Confederacy. And Buchanan endorsed the pro-slavery Lecompton Constitution, which was for slavery in Kansas. Lincoln came in. He courageously led the country through the worst war of our history. And then Andrew Johnson comes in as the 17th president, again, Lincoln the 16th, from 1865 to 1869, as I said. And he allowed Southern states to set up black codes, which were synonymous with slavery. So he was almost trying to reestablish a way, a loophole for slavery to still exist. He was also known to seem drunk when he was giving speeches. Modern historians call him a racist, the worst possible person to follow Lincoln, and grossly incompetent were typical phrases you'd hear to describe Andrew Johnson following Lincoln. And Lincoln's obvious he was the vice president, and Lincoln, of course, was assassinated.
We're talking about what makes leadership and what doesn't make leadership here on Central Standard at 89.3 FM, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Dr. Bruce Leese, and we're talking about, once again, the psychology of leadership. Dr. Leese is a professor of family medicine at KU, Kansas City. What do you believe makes a good leader? Do you have an example of a person in your life who has shown leadership qualities, or a person you admire who has shown leadership qualities, admirable leadership qualities? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can send those traits of leadership into centralstandard at kcur.org or via Twitter, where our handle is at KCURCST. We have a bunch of entries coming in on Facebook right now. Shannon, for instance, posted on Facebook, "A leader will defend the people's rights. A leader understands that the rights of people should under no circumstances ever be eclipsed by property rights. This is a leader of the people. There is no other kind." Thank you, Shannon. Dr. Leese, how do leaders most commonly emerge into leadership?
You know, there's so much randomness that it's shocking. The way that Lincoln emerged was that, you know, he was the first Republican president, and he was formerly of the Whig Party, and you know, the Democrats may have of that time may have won the presidency, but you know, but they were divided, and then the Republicans, the people who he ran, Lincoln ran against in the primary, they were divided. So, you know, all of those, all of that chemistry played together. You could really just call it randomness. At a particular point in time, a particular leader emerged because all the other leaders were fighting with each other.
And that case, like Dr. Martin Luther King, or like a Malcolm X, or JFK, or Gandhi, is based on being thrust into leadership during a tumultuous period that sort of defines a man as well as an era. Talk about that.
Well, ask me a more specific.
Well, with Dr. King, we had a man who just wanted to be a preacher of a small church in Montgomery, Alabama, Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. And then here comes this boycott thing, and he's chosen to be thrust in the middle of that.
Right, right. This is the point where I might talk personally. I mean, he did what he knew in his heart and soul he needed to do for the sake of the country and the world. So he did it not out of ambition, but a sense of service. You know, I have had a number of public kind of leadership positions, elected and non-elected. And all you have to do is start doing that, and all of a sudden people see you and say, well, if you can do this, of course you can do that. And if you can do that, then you can do the next thing. And it takes a lot of, I think, careful self-reflection to decide if you're really cut out for that stuff. I'm not cut out for the political world. I couldn't be a politician for a variety of reasons that I won't go into. So when I've been recruited, you know, will you do the next thing, I have to say no, because I know it's not me. I think that what happens to our great leaders like Martin Luther King and Gandhi and others is that they, you know, they kind of give up their selfhood for the sake of everybody else. And I don't know that I could do that, but that's part of that process that happens. You go out there and do something good, and you're asked to do more and more and more until, you know, there is no – you don't get any free time. Even walking down the street with sunglasses, and someone's going to grab you and say, I need you now.
So in some cases, in the cases of these great leaders like King or Malcolm X or JFK or Gandhi or even Mother Teresa, for instance, they're thrust into these tumultuous sort of situations, and It becomes a to whom much is given, much is required sort of situation.
That's right. That's right. It's even if it starts out as a selfish endeavor, which to my knowledge, none of the people you've named could be categorized as selfish. But even if it begins as selfish, if you're good, it doesn't last. You lose yourself in it.
We're talking about leadership with Dr. Bruce Leese. He's a professor of family medicine at KU. Kansas City, are all politicians leaders? Why or why not? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Are all politicians leaders? We're asking that question to you in the thick of this election season. Are all politicians leaders? You can also respond to that query at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us at KCURCST. That's our Twitter handle, at KCURCST. Dr. Leese, we are in the thick of election season, so let's talk about what we usually expect from political leaders. What do we usually expect?
It's tragic what we expect. I grew up in a time when bipartisanship was a concept that didn't need to be discussed. Partisanship was not something to be afraid of. People collaborated and they got along well. Back then, our political leaders were trusted. You asked me what people expect. People expect lying. People expect all kinds of bad behaviors from politicians. You know, if you were to ask me, you know, what makes a good leader in most people's mind? In most people's mind, if you added that phrase, the answer is, you know, they make the decisions you want them to make. That makes them a good leader. And so, you know, things have really changed, and we expect our leaders to do what we want them to do. And if they don't, boy, are we unhappy.
And that brings up an interesting question from a follower's perspective. Because there are a lot more followers. There's kind of a leadership vacuum in our society. From a follower's perspective, what compels followers to follow an emergent or existing leader? Is it a logical or emotional impetus that draws them to particular leaders?
I'd love to answer the question about what I think what you're asking is why do people want leaders?
Right, right. And do they do it out of an intellectual capacity, or do they do it because there's an emotional heartstring or an emotional pull toward that person's charisma or vision?
Well, you know, we grow up in a world where our parents, our moms and dads, our mommies and daddies, they make decisions for us and they take care of us. And it really shouldn't surprise anyone that followers, and we're all followers to some extent, the followers want to continue being taken care of. So we fantasize, and this is where the psychology comes in, we fantasize that our leaders will take care of us, that we will elect them and they will be like parents and they'll make sure everything is okay and we can go to bed and feel safe at night. From a practical standpoint, we want leaders and we're willing to be followers because there are immediate decisions. You know, on 9/11 in 2001, we needed leadership. None of us individually could have done anything about that tragedy. And so from a practical standpoint, we need someone who will make immediate decisions. What's interesting to me is so many people say they do not want leaders to make decisions for them. They see doing so as a violation of their liberty, and they resent leaders and government and bosses and so forth and so on. So
it's interesting that you mentioned 9/11, a leadership position that Mayor Rudolph Giuliani was thrust into basically because he was just doing his job and trying to be of service. He had been known up until that point as a sort of law and order guy who cleaned up Times Square, put John Gotti in jail, prosecuted where anything could be prosecuted, anybody or anyone could be prosecuted. But there was this moment where he was calm under pressure and helped New York and the nation get through a traumatic experience that was thrust upon him. And became a leader, a de facto leader after that, and wrote books on leadership and did leadership seminars right after that. So that's an example.
I think you may have asked the question earlier. I think you may have said something like, how do we know when a leader is a good leader? It's interesting because a good leader isn't tested until they have to face adversity. A mediocre leader and a good leader look the same when they're not dealing with adversity to the public. I like the metaphor of an orchestra conductor. You know, an orchestra, all the musicians in an orchestra can play well, or they wouldn't be in the orchestra, but they need somebody to conduct, to say, let's all work together.
We have Mary Kay from Overland Park. She's going to make this conversation beautiful, one door at a time. Mary Kay.
Thank you so much, Giovanni. It's a fascinating discussion. I'm reminded of Churchill stepping into power and really being a more mediocre leader until the war was thrust on him. Lincoln, same thing. I mean, so many times what you guys are talking about is true. Well, I had two quick
comments. Reinforcing that, probably the ultimate disappointment in presidents was Grant, because he was an incredible general. And then when he was put in the position of president, he just wasn't cut out to be president.
Yeah.
So good points. Sorry to interrupt, but
go ahead, Mary Kay.
No, the two things that I look for in leaders and how I will be making my decision when I go to the ballots tomorrow is, first of all, do they make decisions by, if I had no fear, what would I do? In other words, am I making the decision to get reelected, or am I making the best decision for the people that I'm leading? The second thing that I look for in a leader is empowerment, meaning are they lifting people up into their own power, or are they hanging on to power? Because to me, that is the definition of a great leader, is that the legacy goes on, like it did with Dr. King or Gandhi. The legacy goes on, Mother Teresa, because they kept turning to people and saying, well, what do you think, and how are you going to handle this? I have a board president of my little organization, my little business here in Overland Park, and he's made a huge difference in my life and my business because he continues to empower me to make the best decisions. And when I'm just not ready, he makes them for me. But in the meantime, he's empowering me to step into that full time.
Thank you very much, Mary Kay, for your thoughts on leadership. And speaking of thoughts on leadership, Beth emails into centralstandard@kcur.org saying a leader should be a good listener because he or she cannot have all of the quote unquote good ideas, only the power to implement them. And no matter how good a leader is, if he or she does not have the people behind them, he or she is not leading. That's a good thought from Beth there. We're on with Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU, talking about the psychology of leadership and asking you, what do you think? Mark in Prairie Village. Mark, welcome to Central Standard. We don't have Mark. Let's go to Doug in Overland Park.
Yes, I think that a good leader emphasizes cooperation with others rather than competition. For example, one of my favorite leaders is Camus, a French resistant fighter in World War II. And what he said was, don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Don't walk ahead of me, I may not follow. Walk beside me, be my friend. In other words, true leaders really do try to empower others and looks for the best in everyone, regardless of political party, ideology, religion, whatever. In other words, they honor those who some might view as competitors and ask for their cooperation. And frankly, I think that's what Obama has done. He's tried to do. Obviously, I'm a supporter of Obama, but I think he follows in the tradition of Camus, Lincoln, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Thank you very much, Doug, for your thoughts on leadership. We're talking leadership. Lindsay tweets in one word, Blagojevich. Not all politicians are leaders, Lindsay says with a very whimsical tweet. Let's go back to this 2009 C-SPAN presidential leadership survey, among other things. Tell us about some of the findings there of leadership.
C-SPAN, in the great tradition, since 1948, C-SPAN took it upon themselves to survey hundreds of historians and political scientists and political science professors, I believe, lawyers and other people involved in the political process. They surveyed these people, and it was the second time they did it, 2009, and it can be found, by the way, on the internet. If you're curious, I would just type into a search engine, C-SPAN Historians Presidential Leadership Survey. They looked at overall, who do you think was the best, next best, just rank order them. But the subcategories that they also asked about were really important and interesting. They asked about how personally persuasive is this candidate, this now president? How much can they persuade the public? How well do they deal with crises? How do they manage the economy? Do they have moral authority? International relations. I list them all because, you know, these are the things we don't really think about when we think about the job of the president. Administrative skills, equal justice for all. So there's more, but I don't want to bore anyone.
One thing that sticks out that's not boring at all, Dr. Bruce Lees, is one of the characteristics of the survey points out is vision. And you said earlier in the broadcast that vision is what separates a leader from a boss.
Great.
Vision, setting an agenda. What does vision have to do with leadership?
Okay, so going back to the list, let's go back to the bottom of the list. Franklin Pierce, who was ranked 40 out of 42, he was that low. He was two from the bottom, Buchanan being at the bottom. Pierce was actually pro-slavery, and it was Buchanan who just failed to avert the war. He was much more. He just didn't have the vision of what this country would need to look like. So I'm answering your question about vision. That's why he's so low. He had no vision. He endorsed the pro-slavery Lecompton Constitution just so that Kansas would come into the Union. It was without regard for what it would do to the country. So without an idea in one's head about what's right and wrong for our country, leadership is going to be at best mediocre.
We're going to go to Heather in Gardner. Heather, welcome to Central Standard.
Thanks. I just wanted to make a comment that I think the best leadership quality that there is leaders who they lead by serving, by doing, and they lead by example. And when I look back at the people that I really admire in history, they were all people who did everything that they wanted other people to do, they did themselves without complaint or worry, like George Washington and Gandhi and, you know, Nelson Mandela. All these people did exactly what they expected others to do, and they did it first. And that's just so rare. I mean, anymore, it's so rare to see a politician or anyone in power that leads by serving. And I really quickly want to say that I want to plug my husband as like an amazing leader. So he's 30 years old, and he's already started two successful companies and graduated and all this other stuff. And it's just these people are hard to come by, but when you meet them, you know it. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Heather. We're going to go quickly to Mark in Prairie Village. Mark, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning, gentlemen. And following up with the original question that was put forth, are all politicians leaders, I come from the school of thought that many people that are in political service are chosen by people higher up the ranks than they are because of the fact that they hope that they will be good followers. And they may have moments to where they prove themselves to be leaders in their individual district or their individual state. But I do believe that still there are strong independent voices out there that do not have the opportunity to serve, that might like the opportunity to serve, but because they don't have that component of the fact that they will fall in line with the establishment, that they maybe never have the opportunity to serve.
Thank you very much, Mark, in Prairie Village. We're talking about the psychology of leadership with Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU. We're going to take a quick break. More when we return about the qualities of leadership exhibited by different types of leaders, including political leaders. Kansas City, what do you think makes a good leader? What qualities should a leader you select possess? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can tell us via email at centralstandard@kcur.org. There's also Twitter, where our handle is @KCURCST. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. There are many different types of leaders: business, corporate, political, spiritual, educational, community, and civil rights leaders. Today we're talking about the psychology of leadership with Dr. Bruce Lees, a professor of family medicine at KU. Kansas City, do you have an example of a person in your life who has shown leadership qualities? What qualities do you think a leader that you select should possess. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can tell us what makes a good leader at centralstandard@kcur.org or via Twitter, where our Twitter handle is @KCURCST. James from Raytown calls in to ask, are leaders born or can they learn to lead? Is this something you can pick up in a classroom? Strikes me more as something that's intuitive, but still can be taught. Talk about that, Dr. Bruce.
Sure, I'd be happy to. We did a show, you and I together, on the show Emotional Intelligence. And as I look at the qualities common to most of the commentators on what makes a good leader, as I look at those qualities that are common, those happen to be emotional intelligence. And we learn emotional intelligence so early in life that it seems like it's genetic or biological. You know, just in the way our parents relate to us, whether they listen to us, whether they're nurturing, whether they're warm and caring and they care about society and the world, to the extent that we are witness to that, you know, we could be good leaders. But it's learned so early on. And again, most of the qualities of good leaders in all the literature on leadership have to do with having good emotional intelligence. Some of the callers mentioned things like cooperation and serving and being a good listener. Those are emotional intelligent qualities.
Victor posts on our Facebook page, empowerment is a quality that he looks for in a leader, but some leaders come out of mere popularity. Arnold Schwarzenegger, for instance, is what Victor brings up as an example of that. He says he gets frustrated as well with those leaders who start with great visions, empower their people, then defect to bad leadership. And he points out Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe, and some even argue Fidel Castro was the same way when he kicked out the Batista regime in Cuba and then sort of became by default a dictator.
Right.
Talk about how vision starts with good intentions and then you become a bad leader.
One of the reasons why I love and hate public leadership positions, civic leadership positions, is that these concepts are so difficult to carry out in the real world. When I started on this planning commission, the Lawrence Douglas County Planning Commission that I chair now, I thought, you know, well, we'll always collaborate. I'll always aim for getting along really well. When we strongly disagree on an item on the agenda, it's very difficult for us as human beings to not get tense with each other, to not get frustrated with each other. I had a great vision for how everybody was going to love everybody. And, you know, in practice, it's not as easy. When livelihoods are at stake and the public is saying one thing and other people are saying, other politicians are saying something else, it's not easy to be as perfect as I'd like to be in my vision of a leader.
Let's go to Regina in Kansas City, Missouri. Regina, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you for accepting my call. I just wanted to make a comment on what I thought a great leader is, and I'd like to say my husband's a great leader. 3 years ago, we were in debt, but he had a vision for us to be debt-free, and we have one more debt to pay off, and we'll be debt-free, and I don't know how we did it or how I could have done it without his vision. And it was hard because I was very resistant, but because he was tolerant of my ignorance when it came to finance, and he was patient, and he was consistent, and he knew his limits, and he wasn't afraid to be criticized, but more importantly, he was balanced, so it wasn't extreme. And the reassurance, oh, my God, I couldn't have done it without the reassurance. He used to be a leader in the community, and he's a veteran. He's 40. I'm older than him. But through the military and just being a leader in the community throughout the states, he decided he didn't want to lead anymore in that aspect. So he came home and started leading the family, and I just think a great leader starts at home first.
Thank you very much, Regina, for your thoughts on leadership, is what we're talking about today with Dr. Bruce Lisa, professor of family medicine at KU. And since Regina brings up interesting points about leadership starting at home and leadership in the community, what are the differences, Dr. Lisa, between political leaders and other types of leaders, say corporate or volunteer leadership or community action leadership or social leadership, religious. Let's run through the gamut.
Great. There are lots of similarities and lots of differences. Perhaps differences first. Political leaders, we forget this, but political leaders are hired by us to represent us. We are supposed to be their boss, and we get to evaluate whether we fire them or not when we go to the polls. I would say that that's in stark contrast to the leader of a private business who we work for that leader. So in the public domain, they're supposed to work for us. In the private domain, we do work for the leaders. It's interesting. So if we looked at that as a continuum, who's the boss at one end? It's us. At the other end, it's someone else. Volunteer work, leadership for a volunteer organization can be the most complex and difficult kind of leadership because in a volunteer organization, people are all there for different reasons and they all have to be happy to be there. And you can't really fire somebody. You don't go to the polls and vote them out. You don't vote them off the island. So besides the fact that that political leaders are very public, their behaviors are more public than those of the private sector, like I said, we're supposed to be their bosses. Business leaders expect compliance from their subordinates. We hold political leaders to much higher moral, ethical, and behavioral standards than non-political leaders.
And why is that?
Well, I think we figure if the majority chooses them and our fate is in their hands, they better take good care of us and not get distracted by things like money and sex and the other things that when a political leader goes corrupt, it's often for one of those things. So we expect
or both.
Yes, both. Not uncommon. About one third of married Americans have extramarital relationships. And yet, these same people harshly judge politicians for doing the same. So
what is in the root of that paradox?
Well, again, political leaders are held to a higher standard than business leaders. It's not uncommon for people to just kind of, Steve Jobs obviously was one of the greatest business leaders who's ever lived. And everybody mumbles under their breath after they say how great he is. They say, what an awful guy he was. And so we don't hold business leaders to the same standards that we hold political leaders to. The question why is because we hire them. Maybe that's it. If I have voted for and therefore hired whoever is our next president, I expect them to behave well, just like when I hire somebody from my shop, I expect them to behave well.
We're talking about leadership here on Central Standard. 816-235-2888. What is a perfect or great or effective leader to you, Kansas City? 816-235-2888. What are some examples of the qualities that a leader should possess should you pick that leader? 816-235-2888. Or you can tell us your thoughts on leadership via email at centralstandard@kcur.org and also via Twitter at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option to jot down your thoughts on leadership, and we will read them over the air. Why do so many people turn to political leaders for leadership? We just talked about holding them to a higher standard, but it seems that a lot of people depend on political leaders to affect their lives directly or change their lives directly or keep their lives out of peril directly.
When things don't, it's kind of like the image of God as somebody in a white robe with a beard. We like to picture somebody in control who we can plead to when things aren't going our way. It may go back to that, we're raised by a parent who we hope, or a significant person in our lives who we hope will take care of us and nurture us and be good to us. And so I think we idealize our political leaders until they fail us, and then they fall from grace because we expect so much from them.
This is a very crisis meets opportunity era for the United States politically, economically, socially, intellectually, and in a lot of different facets, Dr. Lease. What environmental factors or circumstances can hinder good leadership?
There are, let's talk about both the political environment and the more private environment or even public service that's non-political. Any kind of external conflict or crisis can really shake up an institution. And if a leader doesn't act fast enough, effectively enough, that external phenomenon can really wreak havoc. So external conflict or international conflict would be one thing. Economics is another thing. When the economy of a country or a business or the world starts going downhill, it can really affect a leader and a leadership style. Political environment, just having opposition to a leader, is an external force that can really cause that leader stress. Then there are the interpersonal problems, the ones that happen within them.
As we're talking about crises in leadership and leaders dealing with crises, Gail in Basor calls in to say leadership starts by example and Congress is not doing its job. That's what Gail says. Talk about how environmental factors or changes in a paradigm of governance can affect leadership, as it has on Capitol Hill.
The Congress thing is really fascinating to me because their ratings are in the single digits, I believe, now. So as a body, we generally think that Congress is doing a bad job. But somehow the local elected representative in that body still convinces the electorate that it's not their fault. They are cool. They'll change things. So, besides strong partisanship and a demand that you stick with your team being an external factor, signing agreements that you'll act this way or that way when you're in office, besides that being an external factor, there's the whole sense of partisanship. And yet still our senators and representatives come back home and say, look at all I've done for you. And we give them high marks, and then we forget that they're part of the body that we are so unhappy with.
We're going to go to Judy in Kansas City, Missouri. Judy, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I was just thinking when you talked about emotional, I would say a good quality of leadership was Governor Christie in the last few days after the storm, not letting politics really play a role in it.
Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, we should point out for people that
but
may
he
not know.
He gets very angry. He's very emotional. Are you saying that's not a good quality in a leader?
You know, I'm so glad you brought him up because Jablani asked me moments ago, you know, what external factors affect leadership. Here, as you were saying, here Chris Christie reached out publicly in front of the entire country and said, Obama's doing a good job. And what happened to him, you know, the old saying, no good deed goes unpunished. There are many, many, many people of his own party criticizing him for making the opposition look so good. That is probably the biggest external factor is partisanship. Something occurred to me as we were talking and you were asking these great questions, Jablani. You're asking the question, you know, kind of how do leaders get into office and not do well or do well? What you're asking really good questions. One of the things I'd like to say is those of us who vote, all of us who vote, may or may not pay adequate attention to the details about how governance works. If we aren't exquisitely attentive to how laws are made and what's in the laws, we are really easily seduced by the right and the left. It's easy to take an issue and make it look like there's a bad guy and there's a good guy. To be a really wise chooser of leaders, to be a really good consumer of leaders, it is essential to look at details, how they've legislated in the past, what they're really saying, whether there are contradictions. These are critical behaviors that the electorate should engage in. And we're generally, here's the psychology, we're generally kind of lazy about looking into details.
Well, that's why we have shows like this, to give a sense of what leadership is. And do the people we choose as leaders, are they leaders themselves or are they followers? And I think that's an interesting question that will endure even beyond the confines of this broadcast. Tim offered this via email at centralstandard@kcur.org. He says, it may sound a bit strange, but one necessary ingredient is humility. That doesn't mean a lack of self-confidence or even without a certain kind of pride, but arrogance gets in the way. Humility allows a leader to maintain a good perspective of him or herself. We're going to go directly from that to Sarah in Overland Park. Sarah, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to make the point that you do not have to be in charge to always be the leader. You can lead from a lower status. I was in two major non-for-profit organizations here, and I was a financial officer and sometimes a business officer. And what I wanted to do always worked because I was respected and liked. My goals were for us to be financially right, people to be treated right, and for us not to compete with other organizations like us, but to cooperate. I had a tremendous effect from a lower position, and I can see this in looking back, but I would have people who were above me over the years would suggest something that maybe wasn't financially just the best. They were trying to be clever, and I would refuse to do it, and we never, ever did anything that was even questionable.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for those comments. Is that a good trait of a leader, knowing when to say no?
Oh, yeah, knowing one's own limits. That's part of the vision. That is absolutely part of the vision. If you don't have a vision, your decisions are random, and when you should say no, you don't say no. I'd like to go back, if I may, to something that Eric said. I think Eric was the one who said, I think I'm quoting him, and he said, this may sound silly, but humility is an important characteristic. I wonder how many people know.
That would have been Tim.
Tim, said that. Thank you. I wonder how many people know that one of George Washington's traits, the father of our nation, as he's often called, our first president, I wonder how many people know how humble he was. He actually was, it was suggested to Washington by his people that he consider, remember, there was no president before him, that he considered the title of king of the United States or of America. And he said, no, that's his humility kept him from thinking he should be king. And in one of the best books ever written on politics, the book about Abraham Lincoln, Team of Rivals. In that book, what's questioned is whether or not Abraham Lincoln really was depressed. I mean, his son died, his wife died, and so of course he was going to be miserable over those things. But some have argued that Lincoln was not depressed; he was just very humble and was honest about his feelings in the midst of tragedies all around him. The number killed during the Civil War, 600,000 people killed. So back to that's all I'll say about humility. Humility is not a silly thing for a leader to have. It's a great thing for a leader to have. And the two top people in our surveys of presidents had humility in their favor.
How do leaders become great, and why would anyone want to be a leader? That's a two-part question as we close out here.
How do they become great? One of the listeners, Beth, I think, said that they listen well. A leader is supposed to represent their constituency, if we're talking about political leaders, and a business leader is supposed to represent what society needs and wants. So listening well, developing that vision based on that good listening, and then having the flexibility to change midstream if it's found that the vision isn't working for some reason. So, and why would anybody want to stay a leader? A lot of it, again, is they want to do the service. They're ambitious. Some people feel like it's their calling. That's not uncommon at all.
What do we expect most from our leaders as it pertains to our own lives?
All kinds of things. We want our leaders to take care of us. We want them to take care of the country. We want protection from our leaders. If we're talking about leaders of organizations, if we value the organization, we don't want to see it wither and die. We want to flexibly deal with crises. We want to see our leaders flexibly deal with crises. We want them to be honest. We want them to be sincere. How's that for a list?
That's a good for a list. And Jared in Overland Park says, often we think of leaders as those who are front and center, but it's important to remember the silent leaders among us, those who sit back, listen, and understand in an effort to use what they learn to help and teach others. We just have to look around and recognize who they are. We're going to go to Alan in DeSoto. Alan, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, I just heard you talking about Congress having a favorable lead, ranking of
unfavorable.
About
10%.
Unfavorable. Unfavorable of about single digits. I think in a way we get what we deserve because we end up electing the official and then we become uninvolved. What we need to do after this election, whoever gets elected, we need to let them know that they are now no longer our politician. They are now our representative, and that they need to do what's good for the people.
Thank you very much, Alan. Great thoughts to close on. We're talking about the psychology of leadership with Dr. Bruce Leese, professor of family medicine at KU. Thank you for coming, Dr. Leese.
It is always my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And as always, you can check out more of Dr. Leese's musings on anger, lies, love, mindfulness, and also today's program, Leadership, at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as our guests, who include a former Olympian, talk about the coping strategies for grieving the loss of a loved one. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander. Up to Date is next with a local author who sparked a bidding war among publishers for her young adult novels. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.